If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
All right, Dave Beck with you on 720 WGN. So earlier today, I flew with my son to Minneapolis for a memorial service for a family friend, and we decided to stop by Paisley Park, Prince's now former home in Chanhassen, Minnesota, where his fan memorial lined the fence along the property where hundreds of people were still gathering today. The pop icon died on April 21st, and it appears, which I find pretty fascinating, that Paisley Park is destined to become like the next Graceland. They're talking about making it a museum and a tourist attraction. But earlier this week, it was announced that Prince had no will, which truly surprised me, leaving behind an estate worth, along with music and other intellectual properties, as Roger mentioned, a safe, a vault filled with all kinds of music. Now, according to the American Bar Association, 55%, which is kind of crazy, of all Americans, regardless of wealth or status, die without a will or an estate plan in place. So we asked Chicago attorney Stephanie Sexhauer from her firm. It's Sexhauer Law, and she's joining us tonight. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning. How are you?
I am excellent. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So I cannot believe that someone like Prince, who is surrounded by so many that help run his business, did not convince this man to have a will.
It really is shocking. Not only with such a prolific music career, but someone of such enormous wealth, it really is surprising that he would die without having done any estate planning. And though his death was unexpected, he certainly has had legal and financial advisors over the years. So it is somewhat shocking that he would die without having done any planning.
Oh, he battled his record label over the rights to his music. I mean, he obviously had lawyers surrounding him. This is just something that shocks me. But it doesn't when I look at the American Bar Association statistics that say 55% of Americans have nothing in place.
That's right. And I notice that in my practice very often, that families are often surprised when a loved one dies without a will and how much work and heartache and money they have to spend in order to get that estate probated. It's really devastating to a family and also a community. For example, if somebody owned a business and died without a will or a trust in place, a family will oftentimes have to sell the business just to pay the enormous death tax, which can really affect an entire community. I just recently read a report by the Heritage Foundation saying that over 18,000 people are left jobless when a business owner dies because the owner didn't do any proper estate planning.
See, we have I have a business partner. I run a marketing firm during the week, and we arranged, you know, we have key man insurance. Like if one of us goes, there's an insurance policy that pays out the other one's family and we're out of the business. The business continues. The business actually gets an influx of cash. My family gets paid off for my portion of the business. So we have that in place. It's very important to do that. But yes, I've heard of many companies that the company just pretty much implodes because there's no plan. Now, I was looking at this. Prince was not married, obviously, so anymore. So in Minnesota, the law provides an order of succession, and every state is a little bit different. And with Prince, right? And with Prince's estate, finding heirs who are willing to come forward and inherit, I'm sure won't be a problem. He's got six siblings, including half siblings, which have already filed papers in court to begin the probate process. And under Minnesota law, which also surprised me, half siblings inherit as if they were whole siblings. And there's, yeah, go ahead.
That's true in many states, including Illinois, and we're both based in Illinois. So half siblings are treated as full blood siblings in the process of probate.
But there's all of a sudden I'm Prince's son from a relationship from many years ago. Like all this stuff is starting to pop up, and you know it's just the very beginning of all this. Now, I'm married. I have three kids. You know, we have a will, we have a power of attorney, plan for our kids, insurance policies, and all this is so important. But I can't tell you how many friends and family members that have no documented plan of what happens to their children. Like, if they both pass, like, you have to have a plan in place of who you want to raise your kids too. I mean, this is, you know, what should everybody have really in life to plan for the future?
Absolutely. Everybody who is an adult needs to have a will and two powers of attorney for health care and for property.
Right.
Now, in addition to that, a trust, specifically a revocable living trust, is very important. That's the document that will really help with tax issues when you die. Now, pertaining to people who have children, in their will, they can name guardians who would take over the raising of their children if they should both pass. Now, also in my practice, I see a lot of disability resulting from either an accident or dementia. In the case when, you know, for example, a construction worker is deemed incompetent by a court, he is no longer able to manage his affairs. So a power of attorney, a proper, valid power of attorney that's put in place would enable a named person to step in and handle his financial and personal medical affairs. Without that document, then a person has to petition the court to become his guardian. And that's particularly frustrating because we so often see families divided over who should serve, who should make medical decisions, and what those decisions would be. Now Prince, for example, was a Jehovah's Witness. Now, that was important because he had some hip issues, which resulted in what is sounding like he had perhaps an issue with painkillers. Now, because of his principles, believing as a Jehovah's Witness, he was against blood transfusions. I have a case right now where a woman is a Jehovah's Witness, still living, but because she didn't have a proper power of attorney put in place, she is suffering from a wound on her leg that may result in her needing an amputation. But because her principles tell her not to undergo any treatment that may require a blood transfusion, she, by the court, may be subject to a treatment such as an amputation that she wouldn't have wanted. So if she had properly, when she was competent, enacted a valid power of attorney, she might not be in that position. It's a really sad situation. So estate planning is not only important for after you die, but it's certainly important for while you're living as well.
I think what scares some people is that it's going to cost money to set something like this up, but it's going to cost far, far, far less money to do it this way than what your family, right, is going to be taxed with the death tax and everything else, and the money that you're going to have to pay for it, or they're going to have to pay for attorneys to straighten all this out. And it really does destroy families too, because there's fighting of what obviously happens of, right, who's going to be in control, who's going to get the money, going through the house, all this other stuff. Having that power of attorney that can immediately take charge of really what happens after you pass, because a lot of people, and I've talked to people, when I die, I don't care what happens, you know. Well, you have a family, you have friends, you have an estate that you build up, you have a home, you have family heirlooms. There, and nobody wants to talk about this. It's a very, very sensitive issue. And I've done that. I've sat down with my folks, and I know my folks have everything, you know, together. I've got their contact information for their attorneys. I know where everything is. Those are very, very difficult conversations to have with somebody that doesn't have this set up already.
Absolutely. People are very hesitant and dislike discussing their own mortality. It's a very uncomfortable subject. However, I think that it can be very freeing. For example, if you're able to really sit down, take a look at what you own, and you can make a conscious choice of the legacy you want to leave for your own family and loved ones, I think that that's a very freeing possibility for people. This doesn't have to be a scary subject. And like you said, paying a little bit, and not just a little bit, it can be somewhat expensive to draft estate planning documents that will protect your future. But it certainly saves money in the long run, because if your estate goes to probate, which every estate will if it's not under trust, or if you haven't left a transfer on death instrument, or it's not entirely left in joint tenancy, then you have to pay for the process of probate, which is very expensive.
And again, there's three things that you need. You need a will. You need a power of attorney, both for really running the finances and what happens afterwards. You also want one for medical. You want a plan in place if you have children or young children that are going to need to be raised by somebody else. Because that's another thing that people don't realize, too, is that, you know, if you've got an issue with a close family member that most likely would get your children and you want somebody else to raise them in a way you would have raised them, you have to set that up in advance. You've got to think about these things in advance, and it is worth the time. And I know some attorneys, too, will put together payment plans on how to put this stuff together, but it is so critical, I think. And again, for a guy like me, I'm 48 years old, married, three kids. I know how important it is to make sure if something happens to me, number one, that I have insurances to cover my family in case of my death. Same thing with my wife. My children all have insurance policies that can be turned into a permanent policy so that they have some cash at the end of the day. And having a power of attorney, health attorney, you know, because power of attorney is usually two people for health, correct? Because you have two people making the decision for you.
Why do you say that?
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, my wife has like one of her parents and myself as a power of attorney for health. It was the way it was set up. Is that normal? Is that not normal?
Well, no, it's very typical that one person is named the agent under either power of attorney.
Okay.
And then there's a named successor. Should
right,
the initial person not
yeah.
be able to act? Right.
Yeah.
However, it is difficult to name two people either as guardians of a disabled person or guardians of a minor, guardian or dual agents under a power of attorney, because if you name two people who have equal rights in decision making, there's bound to be some difference of opinion.
So if you leave your children to your brother, your sister, and their spouse, it really should be to the one individual?
It's in my practice, I think it's better to do that. And then there can always be a decision later about adoption. If
sure.
it's important to the family, especially in Illinois, the courts will always consider a child above the of 14 or older in that decision. In the case of a guardian of a minor, that's less important. However, when we're dealing with disabled adults or as executor of an estate, a person who does die with a will, then those are it's supremely important to name just one person because of the huge variety of opinions that could arise
sure.
with how to handle an estate.
Well, this again is a good lesson learned that, you know, again, 55% don't have them. You got to go get a will and make sure that there's a plan to protect your assets, protect your family, and make it simple.
Absolutely. And people often think that it just won't apply to them. They don't own enough to make it worthwhile, but it's just not true.
Absolutely.
I can't tell you how often I get phone calls from people who never thought this would happen to them. So it's important for you during life in the case of disability. It's important for you after death for your family.
Stephanie, where do we find you?
Sure. My office is located at State and Monroe in downtown Chicago. My phone number is 312-300-4743, and you can find me online at sexhourlaw.com.
And that's sexaurlaw.com, and we'll put it on our website once we post the podcast as well. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you very much.